I'm going to introduce today's first panelist, which is Tara Curtis. Tara Curtis co-leads Nelson Nygaard's Emerging Mobility Practice, which tracks the evolution of the transportation technology space, identifies trends, and most importantly, works to ensure our transportation system upholds our ideals of mobility, accessibility, and sustainability. She recently led research into transit agency TNC partnerships, developing a partnership playbook, which has been published as TCR Report 204. Tara also has experience in transportation demand management and paratransit. Let's all give Tara a warm welcome.
Thank you, Kate, and thanks for having me today. I'm really excited to tell you about some recent work that we did, sponsored by TCRP, which is a national research program of the Transportation Research Board. I also wanted to mention that this research is sort of hyper-focused in on partnerships between transportation network companies and transit agencies, but it is also broad in the sense that the case studies covered typologies that expand beyond those partnerships targeting customers of ADA paratransit to things like first and last mile and guaranteed ride home programs. My comments will be somewhat generalized, but I've tried to give a few case studies that were specifically targeted toward that customer base. And also apologies for some of the fonts. For those of you looking at the slides, some of our fonts apparently didn't translate well to the template we've got here. But feel free to ask me questions as we're going if anything is unclear. First, I just wanted to acknowledge our research team that supported this effort. I co-led this research with my colleague Meg Merritt, who is based in Austin and came to Nelson Nygaard from a technology company, so has some perspective on how they make decisions and how they operate. Also, we had several junior staff supporting this work with me, Carmen Chen, Dave Perlmutter, and Dan Perez. And we had a sub-consultant, Buffy Ellis, who's based in Washington, D.C. I think some people in this room may be familiar with her. She's had a long career supporting or consulting with transit agencies in navigating their work with the taxi industry. And our work was also supported by a big research panel and a diverse representation from across the industry. We had panelists from transit agencies, from industry groups like APTA, staff from both Uber and Lyft, FTA's council, as well as research groups and a transit union representative. And so this work was sort of embedded within this work were many perspectives from across the industry. So the key research question that we were looking into was, how should partnerships between transit agencies and TNCs be pursued? This was at the request of the research panel, recognizing that especially a year and a half ago when this RFP first came out, many agencies were trying to enter into partnerships with no playbook in mind, kind of trying to get a sense of how to approach it or what their peers had been doing. But there was no guidance being offered from TRB or from APTA yet. So the key sort of need they identified at this point was some guidance. It's not to say that the question of should these partnerships be pursued in the first place is not an important one. It is, and it's still an ongoing question in the research. There's more and more information being pulled together on the impacts of TNCs, as well as the sort of benefits and challenges of partnerships directly with agencies. So just want to put that out there, that it's not a research question we answer directly about should, more about if you're going to do it, here's a kind of a rationalized way of approaching it. Our work focused in on 20 case studies around the country Before we honed in on these 20, we did a national scan and identified almost 60 such relationships. Again, this is just between transit agencies and TNCs. If you expand that scope to look at partnerships with cities directly or nonprofits or other organizations, the number goes up quite a lot. But of those 60, we were able to get in-depth information from 20 through an online survey, through and through several follow-up interviews. 40% of those focused on targeted customers of ADA paratransit and tried to sort of deliver alternatives to that customer base. What was somewhat surprising to us, the most common target audience was a first and last mile kind of use case. Unsurprisingly, we hear about that one a lot, and it's a clear gap. We were surprised at how representative or how common it was to target customers of ADA paratransit. And so we've got a good kind of bank of case studies on that topic as well. Less geographically spread, but definitely spread across agencies of different sizes. So I'm going to jump now into some key findings and some case studies before I get to the synthesis we did of all of this, all the lessons learned we heard through our case studies. And what I've got on the screen right now is a quote. First, we were asking about the why. What motivates you as a transit agency and what motivates you as a TNC for entering into these partnerships in the first place? And this particular transit agency representative said, our agency is always looking for cost-effective ways to provide first and last mile solutions. And that's pretty representative of what we heard, especially the cost-effectiveness side. Most commonly in the paratransit targeted pilots, cost savings or at least increased cost efficiency on a per-trip basis was a key motivator, as was delivering more mobility to those customers. On the TNC side, this is really the main thing we heard. Showing it is more effective than saying it. We've all been subject to messaging from the TNCs, whether it's an ad on the bus stop, blog posts, or messaging through their app. They view at least part of the motivation for entering into partnerships with transit agencies as demonstrating, putting some meat on the bones of those messages, demonstrating that we want to be partners. I think another thing we heard was there was recognition that there's a divide between how TNCs understand the needs and challenges of their target partner customers. And working together is a learning opportunity and an exchange opportunity for their staff. So we looked into, beyond just the case studies themselves, some of the overarching policy and regulatory context variables related to partnerships. And I don't need to cover every one of these specifically, but We worked directly with the FTA through the research panel, and one of the things I'd like to reflect on that conversation was just how actively they are engaging with this topic and updating their guidelines and requirements. We were, I think, 2 weeks from finalizing our report and on a call with them, and they said, oh, hold up, you're going to have to change that paragraph because we've just changed our standing on that point, which actually related to drug and alcohol testing. As many of you in this room may know, there is something referred to the taxicab exception. Basically, all transit agencies and their contractors must comply with drug and alcohol testing requirements for their drivers. However, there has been an exception for taxi cabs in that regard because of the onerous nature of that requirement, and that has been on the books for many years. What changed was that had been even more lenient in the context of TNC partnerships, in that they had a one-year sort of grace period where not anything flies, but less requirements were imposed. Now, partnerships between transit agencies and TNCs, this exception applies so long as the customer has at least one alternative choice. So if I'm Muni and I have a partnership with Uber, as long as my customer can make a choice between Uber and a taxi cab under that same program, or Uber and Lyft, or two taxi companies, drug and alcohol testing is not required. On the ADA service, requirements, we all know there's a requirement for equivalent service. We understand anecdotally that TNCs typically, or in the context of these partnerships, the alternative third-party partner delivering wheelchair-accessible vehicle service, for example, often cannot, it just does not respond on the same timeline as a TNC responding to a trip request for someone who does not need wheelchair-accessible vehicles. What surprised us was that FTA had not heard any formal complaints on this topic. It is a topic that's discussed so broadly, and I know advocates are very actively working on it, that it was really surprising that they hadn't received a formal complaint. Title VI is a requirement that is tied to federal funding, and FTA is particularly interested in providing for cash pay and phone request options because of the disproportionate representation of the low-income population in the protected classes, in people of color and national origin. And so what we have seen is a lot of, from the earliest partnerships, a lot of response to that need to provide for cash and phone options. The National Transit Database is what we report transit performance data to. And it's important to transit agencies to be able to report trips that they provide into this database because it is part of how funding is determined and distributed. Right now, TNC trips cannot be reported into that database, so those numbers don't count towards funding distributions. And that's because the FTA has yet to make a formal ruling on whether TNCs and certain services under these TNCs can fit into a definition of public transit. And then lastly, sunshine laws. These are public records requests laws, and we wanted to do a quick look at these. It wasn't a key focus of our research, but knowing that TNCs often are hesitant to share data, citing sunshine laws, citing the fact that that data is open to public records requests, we want to at least understand the landscape. What we know is that they can vary by state and by jurisdiction, and it is prudent for the transit agency to be very aware of where the what those requirements are going into negotiations with the TNC, so that you can respond to that hesitation that they have. So just quickly wanted to summarize the typical storyline that we heard in many of these partnerships. They move along a somewhat predictable trajectory, moving from what is the original motivation, then how do we engage with each other and negotiate, and then do we move into an operational partnership, or do we just terminate because we can't get to yes? And one of the things I mentioned up front, a key motivation is cost savings, increasing ridership, and particularly with paratransit customers trying to increase the options for mobility, exactly like how we've done with taxi partnerships in the past. But also another motivation that we heard not uncommonly is a desire simply to demonstrate innovation. And I will just sort of ad lib there that I think that is a genuine desire. But if that is the only motivation, it can often lead the partnerships astray, lacking a base in a core problem statement that we're trying to achieve. In the engagement, we saw a range. Some issue a formal RFP, some actually go through a process of peer research themselves. They issue an RFI and try to just understand the industry before then getting to an RFP. But also some will just go straight to the partners and never issue an RFP and start working with whoever has shown the most eagerness locally. And negotiation, the key focus there ends up a lot of back and forth on data sharing, as well as navigating how the partnership will address ADA and Title VI concerns. So let's see here. I don't want to take too much more time on these case studies, so I'm going to breeze through these pretty quickly. I pulled out three to highlight. The first one here is GRTC, the Greater Richmond Transit Company, public transit agency in Richmond, Virginia. And one thing to highlight for you with this pilot that was really interesting is they wanted to provide a same-day service for their ADA paratransit customers, and they put out an RFP that clearly specified a requirements for a call center and wheelchair-accessible vehicles. And what they got was really interesting. They got responses from two local and sort of alternative TNC companies, one called Userve, which is very similar to an Uber or Lyft, except that it does sensitivity training and all the driver training necessary to comply with ADA. Roundtrip is somewhat similar. It's a platform on which their relationships with local providers of wheelchair accessible vehicles can receive trip requests from their platform. So this one was really unique in that they identified and moved forward with non-traditional or not the name brand TNCs and have had a lot of success getting what they wanted to achieve out of the pilot. Probably many of you in the room have heard about the MBTA's pilot that's ongoing in Boston. In this case, same idea, wanted to provide another same-day service for ADA paratransit customers. This pilot was really, I think, an exemplary one for being very methodical from day one in how they approached what their problem statements were, how they would evaluate collecting the data and reporting back. So much so that they've been able to actually change the trip caps and subsidy amounts throughout the pilot to better drive it towards the outcomes of cost savings or increased mobility that they desired. One key point that they found very clearly and others have anecdotally agreed with is that while they definitely are achieving cost savings on a per trip basis, they're pretty much negated at scale because people are taking it more and more advantage of the mobility. So people are able to get around more frequently. Cost savings is not very big. And then lastly, PSTA in Florida was one of the earliest transit agencies to partner with the TNC. They partnered with Uber, I want to say 2014, 2015 maybe, on a general public service called Direct Connect. They expanded that into another service called TD Late Shift, which is targeting transportation disadvantaged populations who have late night jobs when transit is not accessible. They're currently in the process of working out a partnership agreement through FTA's Mobility on Demand Sandbox program. They have a FTA grant to develop dispatching software that takes into account a customer's trip needs and potential cost savings and dispatch that to an appropriate provider, whether that's a TNC, a taxi, or something else. So the conclusion of all this, the synthesis of our findings from the regulatory landscape and the case studies was a partnership playbook that we developed. And it's a pretty concise document. I'd say I think it's 4 or 5 pages, and really tries to be this guidance that the transit industry has lacked thus far. And one of the kind of underpinning ideas of this playbook is, I actually think I forgot one slide in here. The previous slide to this talks about the ingredients of a good pilot. It is, what is its function, what is its potential geography, and what is the mode that best serves that function. So those are kind of the ingredients. And the key idea there is, keep in mind, you want to define the problem statement and have an informed hypothesis for how those that function, that geography, and that mode would best address that problem. And then once you get to a concept, marketing it and evaluating it are keys to success. You can't evaluate something if you haven't been clear about what the problem statement is up front, nor can you if you haven't thought about what data you'll have on hand and how you can use that to evaluate it. And then you scale it, or you terminate it, or you adjust it. But again, you can't do that without being very thoughtful about your ongoing evaluation approach. So our playbook uses 5 key steps. Organize and plan is step 1, in which this was actually a topic of debate among our panelists, where we were debating whether to start with the constraint, the sort of regulatory constrained environment, and grow the partnership idea from that point, or should we start with clean blue sky thinking, and develop an idea, a concept for what the partnership could be first. Ultimately, the panelists said, we want to start big. We want to start without constraints. So step 1 is get the right voices in the room, think what you can do. But step 2 is then bring it back down to earth a little bit and be real about how you will address the Title VI, the ADA concerns, the sunshine laws in your jurisdiction, and any other local policies that you have to adhere to. Planning for partnership is where you get pretty specific, whether you're going to enter an RFP or not, and identifying that approach, launch and operate, and then debrief and refine. But the key point here is that it should be iterative. If you set this up with a clear problem statement and evaluation framework, you can go back and adjust as the pilot is playing out. And so I think that was actually my last slide. So I'll just stop there and see if there's any questions.
So right now is an opportunity for just 4 clarifying questions. So we see Tony. So you can just keep your hand raised for the 4 people that ask the questions.
I was curious, you said that the drug and alcohol requirement isn't necessary, but they still do the criminal background check, and if it shows up there, then something is addressed, is that right?
I guess I don't have my...
Then we have to bring it back.
That's my understanding. The criminal background check process for the TNCs is different from the criminal background check you would do as a transit agency with your operator staff. The details escape me at this moment. I'll just say they're different, and if issues arise, there are consequences for that person seeking to be a driver on the platform.
Thank you, Tara, for a really informed presentation. I was curious, I know that the research focused on transit agencies. Are you aware of any partnerships that might be applicable, especially to our Alameda County area, that has a fair amount of funding with local sales tax monies, where there might be jurisdictions, local municipalities looking to partner with TNCs and looking at sort of an overarching call center option as well as smartphone option to be able to provide more equitable service kind of across a countywide jurisdiction, not just transit agency?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess I would just start by saying, I think while our research focused on transit agencies in particular, we are hopeful that the playbook and the synthesis of the findings are more broadly applicable, generally on just how you would approach these. The other thing I would say is that we looked into the funding sources of each of these partnerships, and by and large, they are local. And they vary quite a lot. Some will use local sales tax, some will use funding from a statewide lottery, some have other state grants or local fees, local revenue sources. So yes, there are case studies that are applicable. The other thing that came to mind is actually to look into this PSTA in Florida case study that's currently being developed as part of the Mobility on Demand program. I think if for nothing else than to be kind of a cautionary tale in trying to do too much original work on the technology side of the dispatching or the reservations platform. But what is being contemplated in Alameda County and using local funding for these pilots is has parallel examples throughout these case studies.
So we can take two more questions.
I think you already have Esther and Don in the queue.
Okay.
And then probably move on to the next.
Okay.
My question is, what do you do if you're after hours, if the bus services have quit and the Ubers and Lyfts don't have any wheelchair access? Like, I was stuck somewhere and I was lucky to get a home from a company that I don't even belong to.
I got a little moment to think there while the mic was coming back. Yeah, that's definitely a challenge, and I think that's an existing gap in the system. Even with all these great new transportation options we have out there, certainly wheelchair access is still a gap, so is late night transportation. So I don't have, unfortunately, an easy answer for you. But actually one thing that we're kind of keeping our eyes on is a partnership between Uber and MB Transportation that is active in six cities, I think, across the country right now. They are claiming that responsive times for individuals who need a wheelchair accessible vehicle are 15 minutes or less. We also know that they are doing some research with a non-Uber entity, so they've hired an outside organization to look into that and actually get some numbers on it. So, So sometime in the next few months, we should know more specifically if that partnership is bearing fruit. We know that they're very excited about it, marketing it as a solution. And I hope for everyone involved that it can be a meaningful improvement to that response time.
Tag on somebody mentioned the criminal background checked, and when, like, are all the P&Zs and prospective partners going to put that, how they do their criminal checks on their contractor along with their in-house employees in terms of their flight book so that that can be shared?
I'm not sure I fully understood the question, but asking about the criminal background checks and the contracting staff, I think I'll just say I'm not the expert on the criminal background check process. What I know is that it's fairly set on the TNC's side. I haven't heard much from their perspective that that's changing, or that would be changing, or unless there's a response to a local requirement. So I hope that answered your question. If not, feel free to come talk to me after, and I'd be happy to answer that then.
So just note that we have made note of everyone else that we did not get to in terms of questions for Tara, so we will get back to those questions at the end.